Welcome back to another article level podcast for ILTA's Peer-to-Peer Magazine for summer 2021. The article that we're going to talk about today is actually in part one of the issue on page 48. Please listen to that before you join us for the rest of this podcast as Evan Shankman, Chief Knowledge and Innovation Officer at Fisher Phillips, joins me, Beth Ann Stubbe, ILTA's Director of Publications and Press, as we talk today about his great article in the summer issue, Legal Tech Startups, The Rewards of Being a Super Early Adopter. Evan, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Bethan.
There's a lot to cover. There's a little bit more here than I thought there was when I originally got your article, which, because understanding what a super early adopter is sets everything that we're going to talk about apart. So could you tell me what a super early adopter is?
Sure. So from my perspective, at least in the legal tech space, I think a super early adopter is a law firm who is either one of the first two or three customers of a legal tech startup, or a law firm that might be the first labor and employment law firm, or the first trust and estates law firm, or the first AmLaw 200 law firm, or something of a particular category that the legal tech startup would love to have as a customer.
And I think we might be in the golden age of startups. You talk a lot about AI and the data analytics space, but let's talk a little bit first about kind of customizations. One of the things you first touch on is being a fool's errand. Can you talk about why tools and customization might be a fool's errand?
I think if you were to ask a legal tech company, one that's been around for a while, whether it's a legal research company or one of the big legal tech companies that most of our firms use for our billing systems or the other big names out there, and ask for them to dramatically customize the user experience, the look and feel, the way the tool works for your firm, there's a good chance that you'll not have the response that you'd be hoping for, not surprisingly, because they have hundreds, thousands of customers. They have spent a lot of time to make their tool work the way that they think is appropriate to the largest number of their clients at the same time. And they basically have things running in a way that they'd like to have them run. So my experience with legal tech startups is if you get them really early on, if you're one of the first few companies or one of the first few law firms that are working with them, you can often really drive the way that they will make their tool to work for you. So if you have particular customizations that you're looking for, if you've seen a demo, if you've seen what they're envisioning, what they're rolling out, but there are certain things that just don't gel with the way that your firm operates, you could ask them for them to change it. You could say, hey, I really love the way this works, but could you please make, flip the columns? Can you please change the labels? Can you provide the ability for us to filter by this particular topic? This is the way that our attorneys tend to go through their daily workflow. Can you make the tool work that way? The legal tech startups, if you're one of the first few law firms to sign up, they are really excited to get that feedback and to work with you. And they often tend to get the job done. So whereas, we have had some success over the years getting some of the behemoth legal tech companies to work on some customizations for you. And we've even done some pretty cool ventures with them as well. But by and large, you get much of a better success rate by talking with a legal tech startup and asking for them to make those customizations than you would with some of the bigger, more established companies.
So this is basically a reverse, you build it and they will come.
Exactly. And a lot of times they build something that they think is great. And oftentimes it is great, but it might not be great for your firm. So if we were to go back and say, hey, we would gladly be one of your first few customers, if you do X, Y, and Z, if they build it and then they tweak it, we will come. And that's certainly better than just if they build it, no one comes. And oftentimes we could serve as essentially R&D for these legal tech startups, where they might not have had the same vision that we had. And sometimes our vision is a vision that's unique to us, and it might not be the best use of their time to customize it for the way that that I see something as being the best way to approach a project or a product. But oftentimes they'll realize, hey, you know what? If Evan's firm wants it that way and this other early adopter's firm wants it that way, we should make that change. And then they might have a much better opportunity to sell it to other firms once they've made those customizations.
I think that kind of goes into the next 2 points in your article, that the sweetheart pricing and the best friend forever status. I love that you've called them that, because we really should look at things more along these lines. We're asking for a very specific set of things, a very specific set of tools, if you will. I feel very much like I'm about to launch into some Liam Neeson sort of, you know, kind of, I had these very specific set of tools. And if you don't bring me back my kid, I will come and find you. But it's the same idea, right? We're looking for something very specific. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, the best friend status and sweetheart pricing.
Sure. So legal tech startups, the hardest customer to get is the first customer, right? One of the things that, frankly, that I hope can come out of the article and this podcast is there are so many great legal tech companies out there, and they have this great product and they think everyone's going to love it. And then somebody responds to the cold call, they're demoing it to someone like me or at another firm on the innovation team or the KM team or the finance team or whatever. And they show the demo and it looks great. And the question that is asked of them is, who else, what other customers do you have? How many of the AmLaw 200 firms have signed up for this product or this tool? And often their answer is none. You know, we just created this product. We think it's great, but the answer is none. And what I hate to see are a whole bunch of really great legal tech startups out there that have great products that never go to market because too many people just said no thanks when their answer was, we don't have any other AmLaw 200 firms. And you know, my goal, I guess, throughout this is to try to help ensure that at least as many as possible of these startups can get past that, sorry, we don't have many customers yet, but we're hoping that you're one of the first few. And that's what I'm hoping we can get at this, right? Sometimes being one of the first few customers, actually, it's not just you're one of the first few customers, but there are some huge benefits to it. And with that, you know, among those benefits are sweetheart pricing and that BFF status. Sweetheart pricing comes with, I would say, the vast majority of legal tech startups for whom we're really early adopters or super early adopters. And often they'll be so junior in their maturity that they'll say, hey, sometimes they've said, hey, we're still figuring out the pricing structure for this. We think that it's going to be in this range. We're going to give you a great discount to work with us, to get this up and running, to be one of our first vouching customers, to be one of our first customers just in general. And in my experience, you know, we get some really great prices when the numbers are thrown out. And a lot of times those prices carry through. Even after year one, sometimes year two, year three, when they are now going to market and their rack rate is a lot higher, I sort of joke with a couple of legal tech startups that we've been working with for a really long time now, that they always laugh and say how cheap we're the price is that we're paying compared to what other folks are paying now, because they're paying market for a mature, great product. But just because we happen to be one of the first two or three companies or firms to sign up, got us that deal and it carries through. As for the BFF status, I really can't stress strongly enough that it's all about relationship building. I've had such great friendships grow out of these early tech startups where I really consider some of these founders at these companies to be great friends of mine because we were there at the beginning, seeing them grow some really cool young product that now is doing really well in the world. It's the friendships are great. The relationship building that has grown from that has been great. Some of these tech startups have, a couple of them at least, even in this past year, have spoken at my firm's client-facing retreat or client-facing conferences. I'm doing press releases with them. I'm doing articles with them. We're talking about lots of really cool stuff, frankly. They've connected me to other people that I've become friends with through them. It's just a great opportunity to build a relationship with some really cool, really innovative people that you wouldn't get if you're just signing up to be customer 800 or customer 2000 or customer, whatever, for some of these bigger, more established companies.
And I think that moves us very perfectly into the idea of exclusivity. There's a lot of competition, shall we say, in the marketplace, specifically in some of the things you've talked about earlier with AI. Can you talk to me a little bit about exclusivity agreements for these super early adopters?
Sure. So this is something, it doesn't always happen, but it's something that I was sort of faced with on the other side, probably maybe 7 or 8 years ago, where there was some pretty cool tech out there. And we looked into whether or not it would be the right fit for our firm. And we learned that it might be or might not be, but we wouldn't be able to find out for a few years because they were under an exclusivity agreement with one of our competitors. And that happens. There was another legal tech vendor that was a startup that their marketing pitch right off the bat was, we're only going to allow one of the, at that point it was labor and employment firms, one of the labor and employment firms to be able to work with us for a period of time. I don't know if they were successful in having that approach work, but it sort of put in the back of my mind that, hey, these exclusivity agreements are here. They are, they're something that, you know, that does happen. And we've had an opportunity with some of our legal tech startups that we've worked with over the years to get similar arrangements. In my experience, it doesn't always happen. In my experience, it is easier to seek and obtain exclusivity agreements if your law firm is essentially acting as, you know, sort of R&D for the legal tech company. If you're just one of the first to sign up, that's great, but they're trying to grow and it's hard for them to give exclusivity agreements to too many firms because then they're going to lose out on potential market share and potential business. But if you're essentially helping a startup really design and develop their tool from something that really wouldn't be ready to go to market to something that is ready to go to market, then I think exclusivity really has a good place there because the law firm needs to get something out of it as well. If they're spending a lot of time to help build a tool for a vendor or working with a vendor, partnering with a vendor to build something great, as soon as it's built, you would think that the law firm would want to get some benefits to that tool before others could just glom onto it. But in my experience, it's never something that's been too onerous for either side, but I think it does help protect and preserve investments in a startup company, especially where the law firm is doing a lot on its end to help that relationship work.
That really does kind of come to your article's last major section about marketing buzz, because all this has been building, you know, going into kind of customization, pricing, being close with the representatives and having that kind of open door policy. You talk a little bit at the end of your article about answering a cold call, but all this really at the end comes down to how it's going to help a super early adopter and then the organization. Can you talk to me about marketing buzz?
Sure. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about getting a good product in your attorney's hands, in your law firm's tool stack. It's all about helping your clients in better ways, helping your attorneys be better, smarter, faster. It always has to be about a product that actually works and a product that actually advances the ball for your attorneys and helps them do things in ways that they couldn't before they invested in that product. That being said, it really is great to create some buzz for your firm. Law firms are always trying to demonstrate, especially in today's day and age, that they are innovative, that they're doing things in better, smarter, faster ways, that they're using technology, that they're using data analytics, and so on. And a lot of these legal tech startups are in that cool space of AI, of data analytics, of automation, natural language processing, you know, all of that stuff. So I do think that one of the really nice benefits of being a super early adopter is you tend to get some really good marketing buzz. When you are the firm that's working on these incredible things and someone wants to write about it, it makes your firm look good. It looks good in RFP pitch materials when you're talking about the cool things you're doing. As an example, in 2020, two of the relationships that we were able to build with legal tech startups were written up about in great publications. Our Blue Jay Legal project was written up in the ABA Journal. Our LegalMation Thomson Reuters Alliance was written up in the American Lawyer. That was great press for our firm. It was great to show the world that our firm is doing these really great things that will help our attorneys be better, smarter, faster. And as an aside, it was great for me personally, and probably one of the reasons why I was fortunate to win an award last year for innovation. And none of that would have happened if we didn't take a chance with startups, right? If I didn't answer phone calls when they reached out to me, if I didn't talk with them at the vendor exhibit halls at ILTACON or wherever, and I didn't see those demos, right? One of these relationships, as an aside, this is ILTA, so I'll throw the plug in. I forged that relationship with Blue Jay Legal that led to that alliance that I just mentioned at the exhibit hall at ILTACON 2 years ago. And here we are now with something really cool that gave our firm a lot of buzz and helped our attorneys be able to better use AI to predict what's happening in cases. So legal tech startup didn't scare me then. And I really want to stress for everyone listening that it really shouldn't scare you as well. It's something that that really can turn the tables in a great way for your firm and really help advance things.
I love the idea of being a super early adopter, but then there has to be something that's next. So as I sort of plug another article for you and as you know, kind of that we're both in New Jersey, I could just come over and grab it from you. But you know, let's look ahead. What's next if you're not the super early adopter for legal tech startups?
I think you don't have to be a super early adopter. You could be a mid-level adopter. You could be a late adopter. Whatever it is, I think that anyone who's in the the KM or innovation space, or really anyone in the legal tech space, should always be looking and seeing what's out there. I think complacency with what you have already at the firm won't get you far enough. I think there have been some tremendous advancements in artificial intelligence, in data analytics, in automation. There are things that could help your firm do things better. And even if you're not one of the first to sign up on it, if you're one of the firms that you're just too risk averse and you don't want to take a chance, wait and see. Wait until a few of your peers have tried out these companies. And when you can see that it's at the level of maturity that you're comfortable with, take a chance. It doesn't hurt to see a demo. It doesn't hurt to pilot something. And this is one point I should wrap up with as well, Beth-Ann, that even if you think being a super early adopter is too risky, or even just starting with trying out any legal tech company out there, whether they're a startup or not, you don't go into it with reckless abandon. You need to vet it. You need to make sure that you've seen how it works. You can't just rely upon a PowerPoint. You can't just rely upon a glossy. You have to actually see it live. You have to try a pilot. If a company out there is afraid to give you a pilot or afraid to show it to you live, and they just want you to trust them, I personally would be very suspicious of that. And I think you should be too. As long as you thoroughly vet it, check it out, make sure that it will help advance your company and that it's not going to be too much of a financial risk for you. Whether you're a super early adopter or you've waited until those super early adopters have given the thumbs up and have done some good things, check out Legal Tech. There are things that continue to blow my mind every day when I see what's out there, and new products keep coming along every day. And if you missed the super early status, there still is a status that's probably right for you that will still help your firm do things in better ways.
Evan, this has been super helpful. Do you have any last words for us?
Take the cold call. I actually got two more calls today, or two more emails today. One was LinkedIn, one was an email asking me to check things out. I'm going to check them out. Feel free to reach out to me if anyone's listening, if they have any questions or thoughts about any of the vendors I've been working with or other ones that might be out there. It's a great market right now for legal tech folks and for law firms who are interested in legal tech folks. So keep your ears open, keep your eyes open, and you'll find something good as well.
Evan, thank you so much. I'm excited to see you at ILTACON in Las Vegas, and we'll check in with you next go round.
Thanks so much.